Okay, things are kind of weird today. Hello and welcome. This is the SDF Amateur Radio Club Weekly Net number 443 for the 22nd of June 2026. That's Sierra. Fine. It's just you and me, Harold. Some weird things are going on here. It sounds like over there on Anon Radio, yeah, it's playing a rerun of Snow Dusk from 2016. And so, yeah, that's weird. And it's just you and me here in the Echo Link. And I don't know if you noticed last week, it was just me all by my lonesome here. So, I don't know. I think maybe the SDF ARC net has run out of steam. All right, so I'm going to skip most of the boilerplate here until somebody joins us. So, anyway, how are things down there in Florida?
Oh, hey, Wayne. Good to hear you out there. We're a population of two tonight, and you were a population of one last week, I guess. I missed it. Had to do something. But, yeah, Florida's good. It's the usual Sunday. Went down to the pool a couple hours ago. It started drizzling, so couldn't do much down there except get wet. Came back, and then it rained. And now it's cleared up again. It's sunny, and the sun will go down. But we're still looking for the every single day type of rhythm of rain and thunderstorms. We still need the rain. It's drought down here. But that's the way it goes, and it's hot out there. So other than that, all is well. How's things with you?
It's been kind of drizzling all day, sometimes a little bit more than a drizzle, but at least the temperature is in the 70s instead of in the high 80s. I think it's going to stay that way for a few days, so appreciate that. What else is going on up here? Well, we've got field day coming up next weekend, and our forecast is for rain both days. So it might be messy. We'll see about that. That's all I've got on my mind today. So I guess we can, you know, sit here and twiddle our thumbs or chew the fat or do something here while we wait and see if anybody else joins us.
Well, they just don't know what they're missing. We live in a gated community, and inside that gated community, in one corner, there is a loop of 84, is it 84 villas, and we live in one of them. It was all built back in 2004, and the roofs were scheduled to be replaced right about now. We sprung a couple leaks in the last big rainstorms, and other people have had troubles. So the HOA turned over, and they got in motion and engaged a new roofing company. So all that to say is about half of them, including ours, have had our roofs replaced. And it's a nice feeling to know that we could have a hurricane dump on us and we'd be watertight, brand new roof. Yeah, you can hear the work going on. Boy, those guys up there on those roofs working 12-hour days, they have got to be totally dehydrated and hot. So that's the big news around the loop here.
Yeah, well, all right. Well, good luck getting your roof fixed before the hurricanes arrive. I think this season is predicted to be, what, less severe then it might be because of the El Nino. Have I got that right?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I saw something online somewhere that said the Pacific out there in El Nino land might be higher activity than normal, and over here in the Atlantic side it'll be lower, less active. That's fine with me. Last year we didn't have any comet around the south end of Florida and hit us directly, or even from the Gulf, so that was a good deal. But, yep, I think you're exactly right. It's going to be lesser on the Atlantic side, but higher activity on the Pacific.
Right. So I think that also means that they might get a little bit more rain in California, and I think they probably need it. So we'll see about that. Up here in the Midwest, we've had quite a bit of rain lately. I'm not sure if it has been enough to cancel out the drought that we've been in, but I think it's getting close to it. We've got some more rain coming up this week. Like I said, next weekend it's probably going to be rainy. I think it's going to probably start getting rainy around Thursday. So we had like, I don't know, 3 inches or so here at my place last Wednesday. We had a bunch of storms come through here. You might have heard about them because, like, there was this Corvette Museum down in Effingham, which is about 70 miles south of me, and they got hurt real bad. So I think that probably got a little bit of national press coverage. And probably there was some stuff over in Indiana that you might have been close to your interest anyway. So anyway, checking the dashboard, no new call signs there. Back to you, Harold.
Yeah, I heard about those storms. I've got two sisters and their husbands and a brother and his family. Well, the sisters live in Indianapolis. And the brother is up in South Bend, our hometown. And we've got a sibling chat. Let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, and there's a brother in Roanoke, and then there's me. I'm the oldest of five. But we've got a sibling chat on Facebook Messenger. So, they kept a running account of the weather up there and how it affected them and if their power went out. But it seemed like the real heavy stuff, including a couple tornadoes, was south of the Indianapolis airport, which is on the southwest side, and then went down south of the main city. So that was good. We will pack it up and go to Nashville here in about 3 weeks. That's the annual Chet Atkins Guitar Convention. Then we'll make the rounds and see as many siblings as I can, and then up to South Bend for my my 20th high school reunion. You believe that? It's a little higher than that, but we'll see how many of those folks go to that one. It'll be good to see them. So that's the story. N4RNW for all the multitudes that are listening.
Is it the 20th reunion or the reunion for the 20th anniversary of your graduation?
I'm joking with the number 20. It's actually our 55th. Our 55th, because I'm going to be 73. And I went to our 50th up there, which was 5 years ago, and everybody was looking good, and so they decided to have a 55th. So we'll go up for that one, and who knows if we might make it to 60.
Okay, so I'm 73 last November. I graduated in 1970. And I've gone to a couple of the reunions, maybe the 50th or somewhere in that vicinity. And there were only like one or two people I even recognized there. So I went to a high school. I think we had 2,000 students, and I was in a graduating class of like 600, maybe close to 700. And I live in a neighboring town, so I pretty much, you know, after every school day, you know, I was headed for the bus to get home because I didn't want to walk the, I don't know, 5 or 6 miles or so home from the high school. So I didn't really socialize a lot with my contemporaries. So I haven't been back for a reunion since. The people that I did remember, they were not there. So the high school reunion has not been a big thing for me. I think there was one person that I recognized, and he recognized me. That's about it, you know, out of a class of 600, right? Yeah. Still no new call signs on the dashboard.
Yeah, I believe our high school, all 4 years of students, was about 1,200. So we had about 300 in my graduating class up there in South Bend, which was right across the street from Notre Dame and run by Notre Dame. But, you know, we went to the 50th, and back in high school, I didn't do much of anything. I just did my classes and my work, and then I'd get off and go work at the burger joint. So here my wife and I go to the 50th, and all these people are coming up wanting to talk to me. I'm just standing there or sitting at a table, and she said, "Golly, you were the center of attention," and I can't figure out why, because back in those days, the class of 71, I didn't do a whole lot. So, yeah, I recognized a lot of people, and they recognized me, so that was a little bit different than what you experienced.
Yeah, well, as I said, I graduated in 1970, and I think you were probably around the same time period, maybe a year or so later, I was not your mainstream student. I was involved in, we had an anti-war protest, you know, a march that I was kind of one of the organizers of it. We had an environmental group, you know, 1970 was the year of the first Earth Day. And the only time I ever cut classes was to go up to the nearby college campus to participate in Earth Day activities there. And I remember the school administrators, they were not very, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, they could not be seen to be abetting the anti-war protesters. But they thought that the environmental protesters or, you know, enthusiasts, you know, that was something that they could get behind without risk of backlash from the community. So I remember that we were able to use the school's Xerox machine to Xerox, to copy environmental leaflets, where they would not have allowed us to do that for the anti-war leaflets. And I know in my yearbook, it's kind of interesting to see pictures of many of the teachers. There was a thing called the moratorium, and one of the things that you see in the pictures of the faculty in the yearbook are teachers with a black letter M kind of pinned to their garment, which was the sign of you know, quietly protesting against the war. So I see we've got VK2DY has joined us here. Hi, Robert. It's just Harold and me, and we're kind of reminiscing about our high school graduation. And I guess the highlight of my high school career is that, you know, I think all high schools, they have some kind of a popularity contest, you know, who's most likely to succeed or who's most likely to fail or whatever. And in our class, there were two or three categories that I actually got some votes in. They were Dictator of Russia, Draft Dodger, and Mad Scientist. So me and probably my best friend in college, we traded the... Oops. Okay, timed out there. So anyway, we traded the number one and number two spots on the Dictator of Russia and Draft Dodger. And I forget which one. I think my friend got the Dictator of Russia, and I got, you know, number one on Draft Dodger. And the third one, the Mad Scientist, I think I won that one there. So that tells you a little bit about what my fellow students thought about me in my senior year of college. So let me give Harold a chance to comment on that, and then we'll go to Robert. We don't have a topic this week. We had no check-ins last week. It was just me all by myself for about 20 minutes twiddling my thumbs. And I think if this keeps up, it probably means time to wrap it up. Anyway, over to you, Harold.
Hey there, Robert. I'll toss it over to you once I'm done here. Yeah, I was class of 71. You were 70. You're 73. Your age is 73 now, and mine will be 73 in August, which is another couple months. So, yeah, after high school, I went to junior college, which, again, is run by Notre Dame. And anyway, I don't know if it was my first year there or my second year there. My lottery number was pretty low for being drafted. My lottery number was 51. So that's pretty well that you're going to go. So I got a notice to go to Chicago to have my pre-induction physical. Came back and then continued to go to school, and then the war ended. So that's the whole story there. Okay, Robert, over to you, N4RNW. Maybe he stepped out.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. let me think. I don't remember exactly what my draft lottery number was, but it was pretty high. I think it was like 230-something. So that was a big relief. I stopped thinking about Canada. And, I still have, somewhere around here, I still have my draft card with my 1A status on it. I thought about showing it to some of the young people today, and they probably think, what the heck is that? What, you know, they have no idea.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. Up the coast here from Fort Myers is a smaller town called Punta Gorda, and they have a military museum there. And a friend of mine who's my age, he lives in Ohio now, he came down to visit. We went up there one day, and they've got flight simulators and all kinds of World War II stuff and Vietnam War stuff. And it showed the bad side of the war and what they did to prisoners and all that stuff. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that, but my friend Dave said, boy, you don't know how blessed we are that we missed it and didn't have to go. So, yep, I'm very thankful for that. So let's try Robert again, and if not, then back to you, Wayne.
Sorry, this is Robert VC2DUI. I sort of wandered off here to take care of my coffee machine. It's morning here, and so I'm having a cappuccino at the moment. Anyway, it is what it is. Yeah, I'm about the same age as you guys. I'm actually the youngest one here, amazingly enough. I was born in 54, so I was a class of 72 as high school. I actually came up with our class colors. I was a jokester as a high school student, and so I when they asked for class colors, I said black and blue for 72, and it caught on. Believe it or not, it was a joke, and it caught on, and everybody voted for it, and so that's the class colors, and that remained the class colors. But anyway, it did actually rhyme, and it did sort of symbolize the generation that we were in, I think. So I'm a little bit later in the whole system. I wish I would have saved the draft card. Unfortunately, it was made out of paper, and somehow it caught fire at one point. So I don't have it, and I wish I would have saved it now. But anyway, I was a very low number, and but they ended the draft before I actually became eligible, I think. So we just let the number sit, and I think it was in the teens, if I'm not mistaken. It was a very, very low number anyway. Would have gone had anything happened, but as I said, I was just at the end, and they said, okay, draft's over. So I said, okay, that's fine with me. That was that experience. Went to a community college for a couple of years, and then went to the University of Wisconsin for my undergraduate degree, and then got a master's many years later at a university that no longer exists, Cardinal Stritch. I think they changed the university at that point. But they no longer exist, but I got a master's degree from them, and then I never went for my PhD. I regret that, but anyway, those are my educational backgrounds there. I wish I would have now. Maybe I'll still do something like that, even at 72. It'd be fun to, I don't know if it'd be fun or not. But anyway, it'd be interesting to go for a PhD at this point. But that's my educational background there. VK2DY, back to Nep.
You might get written up in the local newspaper as the oldest PhD. I'm curious, where did you go to high school, and what did what was your field in college?
Yeah, VK2DY. In high school, it was Muskego High School. It was Metropolitan Milwaukee, Waukesha County sort of area there. Hard to describe if you don't know Milwaukee, but anyway, it was Metropolitan Milwaukee, and that's how I ended up. I went to what they then called the UW Center System campus in Waukesha for 2 years, and then went to the University of Wisconsin. I got a degree in computer science. And I had initially started a master's program there in environmental studies, never finished that. But then when this Cardinal Stritch thing came up, they were doing a lot of the remote education before it became popular, and so I studied with them. And the PhD has a very long description, but it's basically an educational degree. But it has a really, really long title that I'll never get right because it's so long. That's it. So I have sort of an educational degree from master's degree, not PhD, master's degree, excuse me. Like I said, I was going to go with their, they had an educational PhD as well, and I was going to go with that. Never did, but anyway, that's my academic things. And now Cardinal Stritch is long gone, so I guess they still can get transcripts.
Okay, we kind of lost you at the end there. I think you were close to the end, though. I'm curious, you said you went to the University of Wisconsin. Was that in Madison or the Milwaukee campus?
Yeah, the undergraduate degree is in the University of Wisconsin, Madison. And Cardinal Stritch was located in Milwaukee. As I said, they're long gone. They financially collapsed, but they were located in Milwaukee. And they had all sorts of innovative educational degrees, and I should have gone through their PhD program, but I didn't. VK2DY.
Okay. I see we've got a zombie for you here on the dashboard. It'll probably go away. Oh, there it's gone. All right. So let's pass it back to Harold and see if he has something to say. This is AB9FJ.
Yeah. Well, my undergrad was at Indiana University, and it was journalism with my specialty in photography, because they didn't really have the first small computers, personal computers, weren't around in the mid-70s, early 70s. They didn't hit until after I got to college. But anyway, then I went to work for a computer company down here after I moved to Florida, and then the University of South Florida had a master's program in instructional technology. So like you said, Robert, well, looks like we lost him. So I got my master's here in Fort Myers at the South Florida Extension. I'd like to go for a PhD someday. I wonder if it has to be in the same field as your bachelor's or master's. Back to you, Wayne.
My impression is that it does not. So whatever you graduated with has no bearing, really, on what you can pursue for a PhD. Now, in my case, I graduated from high school in 70, and I had a weird situation that I won't dwell upon, but it gave me a very good scholarship to go to a college in Illinois. And I chose the University of Illinois. And what I was interested in was, like, I was interested in broadcasting. And in particular, back in the 60s and the 70s, there was a concept of a, what would you call it, a public access radio station, a listener-supported. This is, you know, separate from the idea of NPR. There had been some stations like in New York and in California that were listener-supported and very innovative, not heavily, ad-supported and commercialized. Welcome back, Robert. So that's what I had in mind. And there was a station in St. Louis, KDNA, which was one of these kind of stations. Lots of volunteer staff and donations funding it. And so when I went off to college, what I had in mind was I wanted to be like the boss of a station like that. And I know that the University of Illinois offered a dual degree program. You'd spend 5 years and you'd get two bachelor's degrees, one of them in engineering and one of them in communication. I don't know what, looking back on it now, I'm wondering what the heck were they interested in. It sounded good to me because I wanted to know all of the electronic and hardware stuff about a radio station, as well as all the mass communications and programming and the software stuff of a radio station. So it looked like a match made in heaven, engineering and communication. But once I got to the college, I found out electrical engineering is not about radio stations. It's about a whole lot of other stuff, making chips and making power lines and generators and, So anyway, I quickly got disillusioned about pursuing the EE curriculum, and I switched over to anthropology because it looked like it, oops, timed out again. But to make a long story short, I didn't do that well as an anthropology major, and I was on the brink of being, you know, expelled for, or, you know, I was on probation, academic probation, because I was not really pursuing my classes the way I should have. There were a lot of things going on in 70, 71, 72 that distracted me. But facing the possibility that I would be out on the streets looking for a job, and having been in school for like 15 years without a trained commercial skill for a job, I looked around, you know, what can the university teach me in the course of a summer or maybe a semester that I can parlay into a job? And computer programming was the obvious thing that jumped out. Now, I had a couple of roommates who were into this, so it was not a foreign thing already. But it turns out I took to it like the duck to water, you know, so cliche. So I quickly corrected my academic probation. My grades were higher, but I didn't go back to the anthropology department and tell them I don't want to be an anthropologist anymore. I just took computer science courses and did well in them for the next 2 years. So I spent 4 years, thanks to my scholarship that was really a gold mine, and came out well suited to be a programmer, but I did not have a bachelor's degree. So that's my college story, and I'm sure there's some other things that I could dwell on that probably would bore you to hell. Anyway, so welcome back, Robert. I think it's your turn if you want to pick it up.
Yeah, VK2DY here again. Yeah, I just Googled the draft number. It was 14. I remembered it. After all these years, I'm surprised that I remembered it. But anyway, it was 14. Anyway, other than that, my initial studies were supposed to be chemistry. I had no clue what I really wanted to do. But then I started taking computer science lessons. This was way, you know, it's back in the 70s, so it was all paper tape from where I was at in way out in Wisconsin in Waukesha. So they did paper tape programming and Fortran on a UNIVAC, I forget what the name of the UNIVAC was, but 1110, yeah, the UNIVAC 1110. And so I that was my first experience with computers, was through a paper tape onto a computer in Madison. It was in Madison. That's how the whole University of Wisconsin system, I think, had one central computer, if I remember right. Pretty wild. But anyway, it calculated money, and so every time you ran anything, it must have spent half its resources calculating how much you owed it. And it was, you know, it wasn't cheap. It was like $1, $2 a run, you know. So anyway, so that was my experience there. And then when I went to University in Madison, I ran into organic chemistry, got really bummed out at organic chemistry, and so decided to study computer science instead. So I'm a sort of failed chemist, I guess. But anyway, and then I wanted to do environmental studies because I worked for the U.S. Geological Survey, and so I started environmental studies, and then I switched over to another program, and then I finally did the educational one. Just, I think, more for the fun of it than anything else. If that's a thing. But anyway, I spent most of my work life as a jack of all trades in computer science. I ended up as a manager for a small IT department in the University of Wisconsin. And that was my last real professional job. But I really liked all parts of computer science. So it was a fun experience. Anyway, I'm going to time out here. VK2DY.
Okay, fine business there, Robert. And it looks like Harold is trying to confirm his, I guess he knows what his number was, but he wants to see how high the actual draftees went. I put into the chat there mine. My number was 260, and evidently they didn't draft anybody above 95. So I was pretty safe. But he was 51, and I'm pretty sure that, by that time, you know, he was a year after me, so I don't know if they drafted as many as they did in my year.
Yeah. I forgot about that you considered when you turned 18. So I'll look that up just to verify that. But it was one of 2 years that I was in junior college. You know, a friend of mine who's the same age, his lottery number was 10s. So he got scared, and he went and enlisted in the Air Force Reserves, and then the war ended. So he continued on however long that deal is, what, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. But I'm sure he got some benefits out of there. Robert, when you dropped off, we were talking about PhD degrees, and I got my bachelor's from Indiana University, and I had no interest in computers at that time because the first small computers didn't come out until years later. Then I got my master's in 96 down here in University of South Florida because I worked for a computer company. But I think Wayne answered it. Does your PhD have to be in the same field as your bachelor's or your master's? Robert, over to you.
I think it very much depends on both the university and the program that you want to be in. Some things really sort of build on one another, and some things don't. And like I said, this educational degree, I'll have to look up to see the name of it, because it's a really long, obscure name to it. But anyway, it was basically... it was intended for teachers, but it was not exclusive. You didn't have to have a teaching degree to get into it. So I entered it through as an ordinary non-teacher. But I think it really sort of depends. Other departments, of course, master's is just sort of something you get along the way to a PhD. When I was in the genetics department, that's where I worked a lot of my IT job for the genetics department. Master's degree was just sort of, yeah, they gave it because you made it so far and you're ready to start your actual work on your degree, your research and stuff. So it was more sort of just awarded as a sideline. But other programs, of course, it's more important, and it's so varied academically that I can't answer that question exactly. I think it would be difficult to get into a PhD program without any background if you're doing computer science. I think that would be virtually impossible to do. But some other fields, it depends. VK2DY.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of competition or demand. So a highly in-demand field like computer science in the 90s and the aughts, you probably needed to have that master's in CS before they would even consider you for a PhD in CS. But other fields that had less, I mean, say English, I mean, you could probably graduate with like an engineering degree and then get accepted for PhD in English if you impress them on, you know, how much you wanted it, right? So, yeah, AV9FJ.
Yeah, I was working for a computer company at the time, and the nice thing was they paid for the whole master's degree, including books and everything, and it was called a Master's in Instructional Technology, and the purpose of it wasn't really a computer science degree, it was an educational degree that was designed to bring current teachers up to speed in the new technology and the new computers that were coming into the classroom. And I'm not bragging or anything, but it was very easy to accomplish those classes being in the in the company that I was doing training and programming and web design and all that stuff. So I lucked into that one, and now I got a master's degree on my wall. So, Robert, over to you, N4RNW.
Yes, Robert back here again, N4RNW, this VK2DY. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, program like MBA, I think most people who are in MBA programs don't have business degrees. I think that's one of those where it's almost always you have your undergraduate in something else. I don't know for sure, but that's my understanding of what MBA, because a lot of people get it after they become managers and want that paper. So I think that's one of those degrees like that that anybody can get into if they have the right background or a decent academic background. You know, like I said, other things, it really so depends on things. And I don't know. I don't know what I do with a PhD now except call myself doctor. I really at one point in my career, I did a lot of archaeology in the summer when I was younger and had more flexible time, and really enjoyed doing that and thought about doing archaeological studies or something like that, but never actually pursued it academically. But I had thought, yeah, maybe I can become an archaeologist, but that never happened. Anyway, VK2DY.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm thinking I've never heard of someone who had a bachelor's of business administration. Maybe there is such a thing in some places, but I have never encountered it. Likewise, I see a lot of masters in public health, but I don't see nearly as many bachelors of public health. I think a lot of people will get, you know, a bachelor's degree in, you know, chemistry or biology, and then they'll pursue the master's degree in public health. So that's one of the reasons why I answered Harold there, that the connection between your undergraduate and your master's to whatever you pursue for a doctorate is flexible, you know, depending on where you go. Some places they'll be a little bit less flexible than others. Now, let's see, there's something else that Robert said there. What was I thinking of? Nowadays, there's this whole concept of citizen science. And it's not really new. It's been around for a long time, but it's just gotten a little bit more press lately. And especially with things like the funding cuts coming out of Washington, right, it might become... It might get emphasized more, and it's just where, you know, it is. I'm retired, so I've got plenty of time on my hands, and I'm really interested in like biomedical research, and I live in a town with a major research university, so if I was motivated, you know, I might go to some professor here at the university who has a lab with, you know, probably has a lot of graduate students and maybe some interns, but, you know, if I go in and say, hey, you know, I'm really interested in how science is done, I'm willing to wash your dishes and, you know, sweep the floors and do whatever just so I can hang around and learn what science is like. I think there are lots of opportunities like that for people our age and in our situation to get involved in stuff like this.
Yeah, you're right, Wayne. Even though my bachelor's was in journalism, my favorite two classes, which were electives or fillers or something, were astronomy classes. And if I had to do it all over again, I'd probably go for a degree in astronomy, but I wonder how complicated a PhD in astronomy would be. Boy, I'd love to hang that on my wall, because... that totally fascinates me, and I still study it just about every day on my own now that I'm retired. And I remember decades ago I heard about these retired guys that were studying biology and all that stuff, and I said to myself, what are they doing that for? I thought they were supposed to be done with all that, but I'm there now, and boy, it's like the whole world opens up. You can do whatever you want. Robert.
Yeah, I think it could be interesting. I know there are lots of universities around me as well. Here in Australia, they created, rather than create a new university or a new college, they just sort of open up another branch of a existing university. There's only 44 universities in the country, but if you count campuses in Sydney, I think you're probably well into close to 50 campuses, but they all are parts of one or two or three or four universities. You've got University of New England. We've got some universities from Queensland down here now that are operating campuses down here in Sydney. So there's a lot of those little campuses around here. Closest one to me is probably University of Western Sydney, Hawkesbury campus, which is basically agricultural. So I probably wouldn't get too involved with them. Nice looking campus. I've been on it, but I'm not that interested in agricultural studies. Probably wouldn't get involved with them. Let me reset for a second. One of the interesting things here, of course, is that just changing to doctors for a second, to medical doctors. Up until about 5 years ago, medical degree was a bachelor's degree. So a lot of the GPs have bachelor's degrees as their primary degree. It was only about 5 years ago that they switched to the MD system, where following the United States system. So a lot of the doctors here have bachelor's degrees. Anyway, VK2DY, back to me.
Okay, I didn't know that. That's interesting. I'm thinking that obviously Australia didn't all die of incompetent medical practice. So it kind of makes me wonder, has the experience in Australia been that the requirement for a doctorate has improved the healthcare situation there?
Yeah, the VK2DY here, they've argued it back and forth here a lot, whether the old MBBS system was better or worse. It was longer program. It ended up by putting a bachelor's degree before it, they actually added about 2 years, because the doctorate program's a little bit shorter than the MBBS, and so they added, and they're wondering if that was a good idea or not, adding a few more years for kids to get out of the program. In general, most of my almost all of the GPs I've dealt with are fine, and they're all bachelor's degrees. You get the professionals, they were the ones with the MDs, because they were the ones, and most of them have a PhD to go with the MD, so the medical professionals are on a whole different level, or the specialists are on a whole different level. But I haven't noticed any difference between a GP in here and a primary care in the United States. I think they're pretty much the same. VK2DY.
Okay. Well, you know, this has been an interesting net this week. One of the lower check-in turnouts, but one of the more fascinating and interesting discussions here. So I'm glad the three of us had this chance to discuss all manner of stuff here. And I was, at the start of the net here, I was kind of pessimistic about the future of this net, that maybe it had run its course and we should, put a bow on it and bury it. But if we can have some more nets like this, I would definitely stick around. So thanks both of you for making this an enjoyable hour. And I hope we have more of them in the future. So let's one more round there. Let's go to Harold.
Yes, yes, Wayne, I agree with you. It was very nice for the last hour. Yeah, I'm just Googling real quick what it takes to get a PhD in astronomy or astrophysics. It looks like they need some kind of a base, like your bachelor's or your master's degree in some, let me use a big word, quantitative field like math or astronomy or cosmology, that kind of stuff. So that's not on my front plate, but anyway, it's pretty neat. All right, good talking to you, Wayne. Good talking to you, Robert. Have a good evening and a good week, and we'll see if we can meet up next Sunday night. N4RNW, over to you, Robert.
Yes, this is Robert VK2DY again. Yeah, it's been an interesting conversation here, and certainly I've learned a lot comparing Australia with the United States, and I've learned, it would be neat to, maybe I'll see about some of these bigger universities and see if they're interested in having a volunteer hang around, old guy hang around volunteering. Anyway, thank you so much for a net here, and we'll catch you next week, 73 VK2DY.
All right, and maybe next time we'll have to ask about how you went from Wisconsin to VK2 land. All right, so.
I see. Blah, blah, blah. Let me get my script going here. And I think it's probably pretty simple. This concludes this week's SDF Amateur Radio Club net at, let's call it, 0057. By the time I finish yakking here, it'll be 57. If you would like to continue, if you want to volunteer to be a net control, contact me, blah, blah, blah. This is Net Control Station, AB9FJ, saying 73, everyone. Talk to you next week.
Over and out, N4RNW, Southwest Florida.
You know what over and out means? Over means I'm done talking, and out means I've stopped listening. So, right. Anyway, AB9FJ, 73.
Yeah, 73s all around.